The last case for this afternoon's session is Carr v. Gans. The next case is Carr v. Gans. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Bryn Holston Poole, and I'm appearing on behalf of appellant Richard Carr. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This is an appeal from a Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court decision in which the judge deemed that a cardiac surgery necessary to treat the effects of a compensable injury was not compensable. The court on appeal has asked us to address whether this is a final appealable order and also the substantive issues involved here. As a matter of background, I'll take you through the case a little bit. This involves a January 31, 2012 workers' compensation accident in which Mr. Carr sustained massive internal and pelvic injuries when he was essentially bucked and kicked by a horse. The parties entered into a stipulated award, which the court adopted in April 2014. That stipulated award found compensable conditions of a symphysis pubis and sacral fracture, hernias, urinary incontinence, and erectile dysfunction. In addition to those compensable injuries, the parties stipulated that future care was reasonable and necessary to treat those injuries. The same was signed off by the court. As this case has developed, to treat Mr. Carr's erectile dysfunction, the medical professionals decided that he was in need of a penile implant. The defendants in this case sought a defense examination from Dr. Gamble, who agreed that this was causally related and a necessary component to treat his injuries. Mr. Carr had to undergo a pre-operative examination to see if he was fit for surgery, at which time some cardiac issues were identified. Now, before undergoing penile implant, which is an elective procedure, he had to be cleared by the cardiologist. He was not able to be cleared until he could have heart catheterization. That was initially denied, and Mr. Carr filed a petition for a further award to have that issue determined. Later, the defendants agreed that heart catheterization procedure was required, and they went ahead and agreed that that's compensable and that they would pay for it. After that point, we dismissed the petition to modify because there's no issue anymore. That procedure was performed, and they found that Mr. Carr needed a coronary artery bypass. Now, he underwent that condition, but it was not paid by work comp. The medical professionals...
So that was a different procedure than what the defendant had agreed to.
Correct. While I'm not a cardiologist, I would liken it to having an x-ray to find out you have a broken bone. The catheterization found the need for the further treatment. Now, the cardiologist that performed surgery later moved away, and we found another cardiologist to provide opinions about this type of procedure. That was Dr. Tessendorf, who said that it was medically necessary that Mr. Carr undergo that bypass graft surgery before he could have that elective urologic procedure, which was, again, to address the effects of his compensable injury. Plaintiff filed a motion to compel payment of these bills and other outstanding bills. Hearing was held on that, and
this is interesting because this is important, I think, in terms of whether the appeal was timely filed, okay?
Correct.
Because it was a motion to compel, not a petition for determination of further award here, right? Or payment of medical bills.
Correct. And why it's a motion to compel is the parties have stipulated that this future medical care is needed. This isn't a...
But there was a controversy over whether this was causally related, right?
There's a controversy over whether the cardiac condition was. However, there's no controversy over whether there was relatedness of this penile implant and the necessity of that.
Okay.
Essentially, you're getting at, did you have to undergo that cardiac condition to treat the related condition.
But so a motion is filed for payment of this, the cardiac medical bills, but and the judge rules on that on December 23rd, 2016.
Correct. That motion also included other bills that were not related to that.
It simply says medical bills.
It says outstanding medical bills. And there were bills for physical therapy, one for the heart catheterization, their attorney's fees, as well as mileage. So there were multiple things in front of the court, and that's all found in the Bill of Exceptions, the discussion, as well as the exhibits that were presented at that hearing. Now, we kind of run into a mixture of the substantive and the final order issue here. The judge enters an order a matter of time later in December 2016.
December 23rd.
Correct. And the...
And that's a final appealable order.
Well, at the time it's entered, it would have been. However, the judge utilized his powers under 48-180 and modified that decision within the statutory time frame that he was given. In doing so, he said, that's not final. I had errors in that. I would like to correct that. He sets the matter for another hearing.
So,
at that point...
So if he feels that that was not a final appealable order on December 20th, the order that was entered on December 23rd, if he felt that way when he entered the second order, wouldn't the right procedure have been to this, to simply set aside or vacate the December 23rd order?
Well, that could have been the judge's determination there, but under the non-pro-tunk powers he's been given, he can modify the prior order. Now, that's why this series of orders, it's our position that they are a living document. You must read all three or four of them together to get the gist of what the judge is saying, because in these modification orders in the work comp court, they do not recite the entire prior award in there. They simply put in the language that they have changed. So if you just appeal the decision that changes the prior language, you lose all the guts that were in the first language that wasn't changed.
But isn't the problem that you come in with this particular case, first of all, I don't think there's any question that the court could modify its original order because it's provided for under 48-180. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a motion filed by counsel.
Correct.
But it has to be within 14 days, and it was. But the time for appeal shall not be lengthened because of the modification or change unless the correction substantially changes the result of the award.
Correct.
And it doesn't, does it?
It does, and this is a substantial right that the plaintiff has here. All of these bills and the attorney's fees and mileage were all in front of the court. To say that a bill, because one of them was for $100,000 and one of them was for $1,000. It's a very dangerous precedent to say one bill is more important than the other based on the value of them. All of the rights that the plaintiff had brought to the court were not determined in that first order, and the court itself says, I didn't get all of those things determined. I need to address this in a further order.
So that's the part that's the non-pro-tunk.
Correct.
What he is actually saying is, the original order is not complete.
Correct, and I need to modify it to include further findings. And then he also says, actually, I reserve the right to have a hearing on this so we can make sure we go over all of those things. Plaintiff couldn't have appealed that order at that point because it clearly says it's a non-appealable order. So it puts the plaintiff who has issue with this from the get-go in a very delicate position, because at what point can you appeal it? It's our position that once the judge entered the further orders and got to the point of the January 19th order where he says, okay, the case is now final, then these prior orders all become one living, breathing document. You take them and read them all together as you have to do, and then that is appealable from there. So the findings that were in the December 23rd order, the December 30th order, and the January 19th order, the plaintiff could not have appealed those until the case became final, according to the judge. And
the issue that you really want to appeal is the one from back on December 23rd.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And then restated again on December 30th.
Right, and plaintiff had no ability to appeal that until the case became final, according to the judge. So
let's talk about the merits then.
Correct.
So I think we understand where you're at as far as the jurisdiction.
Right. So the judge says, essentially, he's having a hard time making this determination that you can have this heart condition that needs to be treated under workers' compensation when it's unrelated to the injuries at hand. The judge says there's no cases on point. It's appellant's position that there absolutely is, and that's the Rodriguez versus Hirschbach case, which the plaintiff specifically had the doctor address the issues in Rodriguez versus Hirschbach when he said it is medically necessary that we address this heart condition to address the effects of your compensable condition. Appellant followed the case law and got the language as it was required by Hirschbach, or by Rodriguez, that's been in play since 2005.
So as I understand your argument, the trial court denied your request because there was no causation or reasonable relationship to the bypass surgery from the accident. And it's your position that there, it should have been a determination of whether or not the bypass was necessary for the treatment of the work-related injury.
That's exactly our position, that so, we were not saying that the bypass was caused by the accident. What we are saying is what Rodriguez says, is that if it is medically necessary to treat the effects of a work-related injury, then with these specific opinions as needed, you can find compensable that other treatment.
Do you agree that that is a factual determination?
That is a factual determination, but it's also a determination of whether the judge interpreted the law correctly there when he said it doesn't apply.
But if you have the right, if you're applying the right law, then it turns into a factual situation that the court, in our body of language, trial court should have made that determination. And so we would need to send it back for that determination?
You would, and the evidence in front of the court, there's no evidence saying that it was not medically necessary.
In opposing counsel's brief, they talk about the McMillan v. Wanza case, which was a review panel case out of 2009, where it was an unrelated right knee, was not compensable, even though a back injury, which was compensable, could not be treated until the knee was treated. And they indicate the Supreme Court affirmed that in a memo opinion in 2010. What's your response to that?
Our response to that is that that's a different situation because that knee injury happened after the work-related incident. It was a separate injury that happened to the plaintiff in that case. They had a work-related back injury and then later had an unrelated knee injury.
Isn't that what's happening here? You had the initial injury and then this need for cardiac surgery arose?
It wasn't a new injury. It could have been pre-existing at the time. Essentially, what the court was saying in McMillan was, rather than take the plaintiff as you find them, which we would argue would be our current case, that you're taking them as they could become in the future. They're just separate cases. The court in McMillan had the opportunity to address Rodriguez, which is what the lower court did in finding that that treatment was initially awarded. They based it off of Rodriguez. The court could have overturned Rodriguez at that point, and they failed to do so. Additionally, reporting it as, or not reporting it, it's a memorandum opinion that did not change the precedential value of Rodriguez as it stood.
And how do you get around the statutory language, which is where the work comp judge got hung up on too, I think, under 48-120, where it's the reasonable and necessary services which are required by the nature of the injury. The nature of the injury. So let's just say you have a back injury that's work-related, and maybe there's a tumor from cancer that's in the way of treating the back injury. The nature of that injury, right, in order to treat that injury, requires going in perhaps and taking the tumor out first, right? There seems to be more nexus there. Following the language of the statute, the nature of the injury. In this case, having the penile surgery is completely unrelated, other than sequentially because of the condition of the overall body to, I assume, to have the surgery, right? You want to have the heart fit first. But it isn't that you have to have the cardiac surgery you know, to have the other surgery. If he'd have been otherwise fit, he could have just had the surgery.
Well, what the expert said in this case is that they would not do the penile implant surgery on him without doing the cardiac surgery.
But the nature of that injury is not in any way tied to the cardiac condition. You know what I'm saying? It's not like there's something in the way of it. It's just the overall fitness of the human body to undergo the voluntary or elective surgery. The preference, of course, would always be to have you in the best condition, right? So it's a little different, right? There's not as direct a nexus
right.
when you're looking at the nature of the injury itself.
Right, and I understand what you're saying there. Unfortunately, what Rodriguez says is it doesn't go to that extent. Rodriguez says that what you need to show is not that it's reasonably related to the injury. You need to show that it is necessitated to treat the effects of the injury.
Well, he'd have needed the cardiac surgery no matter, right?
He may have. However, he needs the penile implant due to the work.
I mean, they didn't
injury.
Do the cardiac surgery because he wanted it. They did the cardiac surgery because he had a cardiac issue.
Correct, and it was discovered in the need for this penile implant, which was directly caused by the injury.
It's complex.
It's an interesting case.
It is. It's very interesting.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate the additional time.
How much time did we take her over? Please add that to the evidence. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Adam Wackel, and I represent Applee Gordon Gans doing business as G&H Farm. And judges, I believe this case was appealed out of time. However, even if this court has jurisdiction due to a timely appeal, the Workers' Compensation Court was not clearly wrong in finding that there was no reasonable relationship or causal link between the heart condition and the compensable injury, which was a pelvic injury.
But that's not the language that Rodriguez uses that needs to be considered, is it?
Well, with regard to Rodriguez, Rodriguez involves a pre-existing injury case. And one thing I would like to bring to the court's attention is in the Foote case cited in our brief in 2001, the Nebraska Supreme Court states that the subsequently found injury must have a causal or reasonable link to the compensable injury. That was in 2001.
Is that a factual determination?
Yes.
Okay, was that determination made here?
It was a determination made in the Workers' Compensation Court that I would suggest was not clearly wrong.
Okay, I'm not necessarily agreeing with you on that, but I'll listen to what you have to say. Explain to me how the issue as to whether or not it was a necessary requirement to obtain the surgery for the penile implant was addressed by the trial court.
The necessity aside, Judge, and I'm having trouble articulating what the court said with regard to the necessity.
That's my problem.
With
I'm not saying it was or wasn't. I'm just saying I don't find where he addressed it.
I think that's fair. Setting that aside, though, judges, I believe, regardless of whether the injury, the heart surgery, was or was not necessary, it still has to have a causal link. The 2001 Foote case is cited in our brief. The Rodriguez case, which was brought to the court's attention, was, I believe, in 2005. In 2009, this court in Visoso, which is over 4 years after the Rodriguez opinion, still states that in order for a subsequently found injury to be compensable, it must be reasonably related to the compensable injury.
But I'm trying to think back to what that case was, and I don't recall it being a situation like this where there was a compensable injury that needed to be treated, but something else had to be done first in order to be able to do that.
Well, in the McMillan case that we cite in our brief, and we noted that in memorandum opinion, that case was affirmed. Although in appellant's reply brief they've tried to qualify the manner in which it was affirmed, I'll tell you that in that Supreme Court memorandum opinion, which was in 2009, 4 years after the Rodriguez opinion, the Nebraska Supreme Court again cites Split and states that there must be a causal link or reasonable relationship between the subsequently found injury and the compensable injury.
I think that, but you're leaving out some words from how I read Rodriguez. There has to be a causation or a causal relationship to treat the compensable injury. That's different than causally related to the compensable injury. Don't you think that's different?
I would argue that it's not. I believe that the for that any injury may be necessary to be treated. But what it's got, but what is compensable is a work-related injury that arises in the course and scope of employment. Mm-hmm. This particular injury, the cardiac condition, was not that injury, nor was it aggravation of that injury.
But we have a doctor saying that it was medically reasonable and necessary to treat the compensable injury. Isn't that directly out of Rodriguez?
I would argue that it's not. And further, in distinguishing Rodriguez, Rodriguez is a pre-existing injury case. Although the record is unclear as to whether the court found it necessary or not, I think the evidence offered and received in the court shows that this was more likely a subsequent injury, which means that McMillan is the case that should be followed as opposed to Rodriguez. With regard to, go ahead, question?
I just wanted you to go back to the jurisdiction issue.
Okay. With regard to the jurisdictional issue, on December 23, the court entered an order that denied compensability of the coronary artery bypass surgery. That was an order that denied appellant's motion that requested payment for coronary artery bypass surgery.
Well, but it included other things, too.
The prayer for relief does state a request payment for outstanding medical bills, but the only outstanding medical bill referred to in the motion was the coronary artery bypass. Okay? On top of it, assuming that it was that the motion...
Let's don't assume.
Even if the motion was broad enough to include other medical bills other than coronary artery bypass, coronary artery bypass was a substantial right and certainly the only subject of this appeal. It was decided on December 23rd.
Excuse me, but for purposes of argument, if the order that had been entered in January had denied the attorney's fees, had denied the other medical expenses from being paid by your client, you don't think that they would have erased those as assigned errors?
They could have in a subsequent appeal. The time for appeal with regard to the December 23 order began to run on December 23.
Okay, I understand that.
Okay. Had the court, had they wanted
to go to the non-protunct order.
Non-protunct order on December 30. While the court tried to retroactively undo what it did 7 days earlier.
Could have set aside the original order.
It didn't undo what it did. It didn't change the substantive holding of the original
order. Correct, Judge. I would liken it to wanting to change your will but not doing it. Number one, it didn't change the non-compensability of the coronary artery bypass surgery. Number two, it didn't affect a change with regard to the latter issue, the catheterization bill. It just simply said, well, let's set a hearing on that issue. 48180 says that whatever change or modification that can be made under that statute must be entered within 14 days of the order sought to be modified. That order was entered on December 23. So a subsequent hearing on January 12, which is outside of 14 days, and an order on that hearing on January 17, which is 27 days after the December 23 order, is way outside of the confines of 48-180.
It's interesting because 48-180, you know, gives the judge 14 days to change something that's done, right?
Right.
And does that also mean you can actually say, I'm going to reopen up the record to take in more evidence, because that's kind of what it suggests, going to have further hearing down the road, right? So you could almost never have finality, you know, if you could just keep reopening the record. So I'm just wondering if, with this statute, and I know you argued in your brief, you're saying that allows the court 14 days to make those changes, not to continue and reopen a prior order to receive new evidence.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
And so at that point, if nothing else, that became the date that you would have had to appeal within 30 days from.
Yes.
The nunk-pro-tunk or the 48-180 order.
Yeah. Yes.
I can't find this site, but I believe there's a case that uses the statute and talks about an attorney filing a motion asking for a nunk-pro-tunk order, alleging that there were issues that the court did not resolve. The court took that motion and said, you're right, there are things, and continued it on to a different date, outside of the 30 days, had the hearing, and then entered the order. And in that case, the Supreme Court said that that was perfectly okay. How is that any different than this?
Judge, I haven't read the case, nor do I know the case name of the case you're referring to.
I thought I could spot it right away.
No worries, but factually, as you're representing it to me, I would argue, I don't know what the facts were that allowed him to, he or she, to the judge in the Workers' Compensation Court, to take more time. But in this case, within 14 days, Judge Fitzgerald identified some change he wanted to make. He just didn't make it. And I don't think that you can go outside of the 14-day period. If he wanted to modify or change it, he should have called counsel on the phone. He should have had a hearing within 14 days, knowing that he himself was invoking 48-180. That's what his order states. And taking care of that modification or change within the 14 days, as opposed to setting a hearing that was from the outset beyond 14 days.
Well, as soon as he indicates that there are issues that have not yet been resolved, that should have been resolved in the December 23rd order, then doesn't that make the December 23rd an interlocutory order? And we don't have a final order until after the hearing and the entrance of the January order?
Judge, I would disagree with that simply because the December 23 order was clear, it was final, it denied compensability of the coronary artery bypass. It did not reserve any issues for future date. And it affected appellant's substantial right to have compensability for that particular surgery. And even if you, this court found that in asking for more time to modify the order, as the court essentially did in its December 30 order, even if that was timely in compliance with the confines of 48-180, none of the subsequent orders, December 30, January 4, January 17, affected any substantial change of the initial order.
Yes, it did. In the one in January ordered additional expenses to be paid. It ordered mileage to be paid.
You're saying those aren't substantial?
That what I'm saying is that didn't substantially change the compensability of the coronary artery bypass surgery. I'm not arguing a dollar amount.
That was the key issue in the motion itself, right?
Correct.
And had the December 30th order done all of that instead of setting another hearing, totally agree with you. But I'm having trouble knowing what the appellant was supposed to do here after the December 30th order, because it clearly, in my mind, renders it not a final order because it's now reserving these issues for further determination. And we've got case law that says in the workers' compensation area, then it's not a final order. So in all likelihood, such an appeal would have been kicked out.
The usual solution, of course, is if the court would have set aside the order, rescheduled the matter for hearing, and then entered a new order. But unfortunately, that didn't happen, and so we're stuck with what we've got.
I agree. And setting aside the jurisdictional issue, in any event, and even if this court concludes that the necessity of the coronary artery bypass was not addressed in the order, the causal or relationship between the two was addressed, is necessary, This court stated so in Visoso. The Nebraska Supreme Court stated so in its memorandum opinion in Juan Zach's, the McMillan opinion. And there was no causal relationship. And for those reasons, I ask this court to affirm the workers' compensation order.
Can we talk for a minute about the form of how this was all brought? I mean, the petition for further award was dismissed by agreement. The one that was filed in 2015, it was dismissed July of 2015, dismissed the petition for further award. And then there's this motion to compel that's at issue right now, right?
Yes.
What's the statutory authority for filing a motion to compel in work comp court for this kind of relief?
Judge, I'm not familiar with the exact statute that you're asking for. However, I do believe that that is something that would have been within the confines of the 2015 order that they had they not voluntarily dismissed it.
Well, they brought a petition before, and maybe it's just a matter of nomenclature, but they brought a petition for further award. Now suddenly it's a motion to compel.
Right.
Should there be some distinction between those pleadings, those types of pleadings?
I think, Judge, that the language of the motion would control versus the title, even though there is some differentiation between the two. Mm-hmm.
And the motion is simply seeking compelling payment of outstanding medical bills. Doesn't ask for attorney's fees.
Correct.
Right?
Doesn't ask for mileage.
Doesn't ask for mileage.
Correct.
It simply asks for outstanding medical bills.
Correct.
Thank you.
One more question. In this case, there wasn't a specific finding by the trial court as to whether this cardiac condition arose before or after the injury.
I would agree.
That there was not one?
There was not a finding.
There was not a finding.
And there was such a finding in the McMillan case? Or no? I guess McMillan noted that there was no such finding in the Rodriguez case.
Right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I believe the appellant is out of time.
You hope so, right?
We appreciate you being here.
Yes, we'll
here.
Be deducting that next time you come in.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you very much.
Very interesting issue.
Matters deemed submitted and you are excused. That completes this session of the Court of Appeals.